we didn't have capital to invest in other production. So what we did was, and this was our model moving forward, was we took that button up, which was our next product launch. And we did videos with our friends, you know, immediately that thumbstop social media like hook that was like, do you ever have this problem? Showing that massive chest gap, you know, our videos were so humorous and relatable and people just loved it. And so going from like a whole year of no sales to doing 30,000 in 3 weeks from one color button up was a big deal for us back in 2016 now at this point. So we knew that that was the way we were going to, you know, bootstrap this brand.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. I love to give a little shout out to the listeners who are kind enough to take the time to post a review of the show, and I've got one of those to do right now. Huge thank you to Mama Kai, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from the UK, for your 5-star review and rating on Apple Podcasts. Are you giving it the title, Making Me Money Easy 5 Stars? I mean, what more do we need, quite frankly? And then in the review, you said, thanks so much, Chloe, for the pod. I love it. So good. Makes me money each time I listen to it. How cool is that? Well, Mama Kai, very cool having you listening. And thank you so much for taking the time to put that review on Apple Podcasts. If you would like a shout out at the start of an episode, then just go to ecmp.info/review to find out how to leave us a review. Now, in this episode, I'm chatting with a fashion brand who are on a mission. You'll find out all about that. Who've done some fabulous things over the last 10 years and really evolved their business to become a real true success story in what they do. We'll be talking about testing. We'll be talking about ads. We'll be talking about business models and funding methods. We will be talking about where you base your business, how you expand overseas. There's loads of cool stuff. And our guest is just super inspirational as well. So grab yourself a cup of coffee and a nice biscuit and enjoy this one. Please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips, which are brilliant too, and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. Vicky Pasha is the founder and CEO at Dapper Boy, a genderless body-inclusive apparel line. Selling via their Shopify store, they were founded in 2015, and last year, 2024, they hit $1.36 million in sales. Hello, Vicky.
Hello, Chloe. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome to have you here. Congrats on hitting the 1.36 million and congrats on 10 years in business as well. Must be very cool.
It is. It's just, it's gone by so fast. But I think we were talking before this, the day to day, though, it doesn't feel that way until you have this milestone moment and you're like, wow, 10 years, thinking back to those first days of trying to figure this all out.
So, how did you get into e-commerce? Was it with Dapper Boy? Was it before Dapper Boy? What's your own e-commerce journey?
Yeah, it was with Dapper Boy. You know, Dapper Boy really started with my own personal journey, shopping in the men's department, not made for my booty, you know, in my curves. And, you know, I always, when I shopped and had the guts to shop in the men's department for the first time, it was everything for me. It was like who I was, that confidence. And I just thought, you know, the ill-fitting clothes, that's just how it was. This is how men's clothing fits. And if this is what I want, this is what I have to deal with. And I used to wear my button-ups down to the middle of my chest and leave it out on the bottom like it was a style. But, you know, it was clearly because, again, I'm talking about the booty again. But yeah, so I realized, you know, we launched this brand on Kickstarter back in 2015 with our very first pair of slim straight jeans. And it was more than just me that had this problem. It was so many other people. It's even more than, you know, more masculine presenting like me. It was people of all bodies, genders, sizes. And we really had something here. You know, we speak into existence every day that we are the next Levi's of all gender fashion. And that's a real thing. And, you know, what a journey it's been.
And you started with jeans, one of the hardest garments to get right.
Yeah. Well, and imagine too, I didn't have a fashion background. I have a marketing background. I was in casino marketing specifically for 10 years. And so what a pivot, you know, but again, it was just that problem. And people were just, I mean, every single day, like, I have that problem. I do too. And so it was crazy because without the fashion background, we were just Google searching manufacturers. And that's not a simple thing to do. You got to be in the know, go to the, you know, conferences, things like that too. And when we were finally able to reach some of them, I usually got hangups. People were like, you don't even know what you're talking about. Like, what kind of minimums, you know, the questions that I had no clue how to answer. But one manufacturer actually emailed us back and said, I think you're really onto something here to do a truly, you know, all gender pair of jeans, and hooked me up with their pattern maker. And we were off to the races. And it's crazy, though, that it actually took 6 months to make our first sample, which is a very long time. I mean, samples typically take for me now, even when developing something new, you know, weeks, maybe 2 months max, if it's like something earth shattering here. But it took a long time because we were taking, you know, notes on our favorite men's and women's jeans and really making this hybrid pair. Like, it's crazy that our jeans to this day, you know, we have deep pockets, right? And women's jeans to this day still don't have that. It shouldn't be like revolutionary to have functional pockets for women. You know, it's crazy. Or, you know, stretch for men, and that men have curves too, you know, and not accounting for that. So we really fit all bodies, and we're very proud of that and the confidence that it builds in, you know, for people.
And you've gone a long way past jeans now. So what does the product range look like in 2025?
Yeah. So we have jeans. So our core products are jeans. You know, we've developed a lot of different styles now, but also our button-ups. And what's unique about our button-up shirts, again, made for curves and a wide range of bodies, but we have these hidden snaps that go behind the button placket to prevent the dreaded chest gap that you see, you know, with both men's and women's button-up shirts. So that's such, you know, every time we drop a button-up shirt, those sell out typically within days. That's how popular those are. But really, it's kind of interesting. Every product we've launched has gone along with my own confidence journey, you know, with jeans and everyday wear. We even have these, you know, unstructured casual knit suits, you know, because I started now, you know, developing as this thought leader in my space, and I'm on stages and I'm wearing my suits now because I needed that. And I still can't find to this day clothing that fits me in the men's department. Swimwear even, you know, and now I'm on this journey of trying to balance my life, you know, and with working out because I've gained weight being this, you know, stressed entrepreneur. But my whole life, I was actually an athlete. And so I'm going back to the gym and I'm realizing my wife is like, you know, your Dapper Boy clothes don't match your gym look whatsoever. I'm just like this bummed. But now, you know, we're about to launch that line and I feel so much more confident just even at the gym. So I'm feeling like I'm finally hitting that balance. And so all of our products have really gone along with my own personal journey.
That's kind of so cool. You needed a new wardrobe, so you built an e-commerce company.
Exactly. Wild.
Completely wild. Now you started in the US. Where are you selling? You selling to now? Are you selling globally, or are you selling purely to the US at the moment?
We are selling globally. We actually have quite a few customers in the UK, and actually throughout Europe and Canada, and so you know, we're expanding, which is exciting. You know, right now it has been challenging because, you know, there's a lot of duties and things like that. And our customers outside of the US are always emailing us like, when are you going to come here? Because it's a fortune. Like, sometimes we'll get packages back, you know, because the duties sometimes outweigh the price of the product. And so it's always been part of our plan to expand internationally. And so, yeah, we're in the process of doing that right now. To be honest, my wife and I are going to be boots on the ground there. We're moving to Spain in August so that we can, you know, come into the UK, meet fellow business owners, meet our LGBTQ community, meet the fashion community, and, you know, just get in there. And we're so excited and nervous, not gonna lie. You know, I've never even been to Europe. So, we're those people that just do these crazy things.
Speaking for Europe, which I suppose I probably can't anymore because I'm in the UK and we're not technically in Europe anymore. We're all very nice over here. Generally, the majority of us are pretty nice. The e-commerce industry is lovely. So, Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. So you're now big into international 3PLs then, I suppose, with the business shift.
Yeah, you know, we're still working through that process. We are speaking with the company right now and contemplating if maybe shipping out of the Netherlands may be our best bet, just because the port size there and might be easy to ship throughout all of Europe from that location. But, you know, that's all still we're talking about literally right now.
I'm not an expert in 3PL location, but a lot of people seem to be shipping out of the Netherlands now for the EU. So, seems to me like you're probably on a good track with that one. So who is the team in the business? Because you're managing lots of different types of product now. You're doing international sales. You're currently expanding the ops. You don't buy ready-made products in. You are working with the manufacturers and designing all of those. So what does your team look like?
We're a very small team. It's still my wife, myself, and we have two part-time employees. We do have some outside contractors as well, you know, as in, you know, our paid ads media team. We do have a local content team, you know, that shoots a lot of our social media content, and an accounting team. And that's it. We're bare bones, but we're proud of what we produce. We've learned every aspect of this business from the ground up, and we're so much more confident now, you know, in the decisions that we're making as we expand and scale this brand.
So when you yourselves move over to Europe, will you be keeping the same team and just getting even better at remote working and outsourcing and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's been interesting. So actually today I'm having a meeting with somebody that is here that can kind of manage the overall operations. We do have some, you know, our key team members have been with us pretty much from the beginning as well. So they know what's going on. And what's kind of crazy, this is a quick little story. We actually invested in our part-time team members to start their own 3PL here in San Diego, Ship City. And so they ship all of our product, which is really cool. So they will still be doing that. And, you know, we'll still be obviously working, doing all the content, things like that. But our plan is, you know, as we expand, we'll be shipping still samples here to the U.S., to a team that's going to coordinate, you know, our photo shoots and things like that. But we'll still be shooting content and, you know, with our friends in the UK as well when we get there.
Very cool. So whilst you'll not be in the US, the look of the brand will still be very unchanged because your content team who are doing all the photography, et cetera, are still based in the same place.
Exactly. You know, and Charisse and I, who's my wife, and she's, you know, co-founder of Dapper Boy as well, we're very heavy in content. You know, we're very much right now the face of the brand. You know, it's a story. You know, we're not just another brand. We want to make people feel like they're part of our journey. And so we're going to be very, you know, and I think it'll be interesting for people to see, you know, kind of behind the scenes of how we're scaling this business. You know, what does it look like for an entrepreneur, you know, to run the brand and also expand the brand? And I think that's interesting for people to follow and really want to support.
And are you you did the Kickstarter at the beginning, but are you a bootstrapper or do all the funding runs? What's your kind of funding the business model, I suppose?
Yeah, we were a bootstrapper. Actually, it still feels that way right now. So how we were able to bootstrap this brand to, you know, over a million a year was that we did pre-order campaigns. So it really was our marketing efforts that kind of made us viral in the beginning. You know, we were afraid to have fun. You know, our brand is not a, you know, political movement by any means. This is really about confidence, you know, and people feel like there are, you know, that we are their friends. And so what we did, I'll never forget, it was the very first video with that button-up shirt. Once we were done with Kickstarter, let me backtrack a little bit, actually. Once we were done with Kickstarter, we didn't want to do another Kickstarter campaign. We sold out of those jeans, that first run of jeans, so quickly. And then we were like, now what? What do we do? We don't have enough money to invest in other products. You know, we didn't think ahead. You know, at that time, we were just like, yeah, we did our first production. So that is like a year later, we were either going to close the doors or figure out another way because we didn't have capital to invest in another production. So what we did was, and this was our model moving forward, was we took that button up, which was our next product launch, and we did videos with our friends, you know, immediately that thumbstop social media like hook that was like, do you ever have this problem? Showing that massive chest gap, you know, mm-hmm. And then just us like you know, it's our videos were so humorous and relatable, and people were just like, what are these guys doing? I mean, we were singing and writing 90s R&B style songs about button-ups dancing around, you know, with our friends, and people just loved it. And so going from like a whole year of no sales to doing 30,000 in 3 weeks from one color button-up was a big deal for us back in 2016 now at this point. So we knew that that was the way we were going to, you know, bootstrap this brand. So what we ended up doing throughout the years was, okay, that button-up went great. Let's launch three colors. And we tell people, hey, guess what? Get in now. You only have 3 weeks to get in on intro pricing, you know, which was a discount up front instead of at the end of the product life. And we only have 300. So we would just create so much FOMO. And these customers were just getting in on every single campaign. We would just sell out. And that's how we were just building. And that's how we were able to test our product to see if people even liked it and really build our baseline, you know, collection, and then just continue to launch different colors. And so people were in on every campaign, we would sell out. And that's how we really built this. But it was never meant to be a long-term thing, because the problem with that is that the lag in, you know, delivery. You know, we weren't making the product. We were just trying to collect the funds to give to the manufacturer to make the product. And in the beginning, we were thinking so closely about margins. We were just trying to build up and see, you know, if this could really work. And so there was a lot of lessons learned along the way, you know, to the point where even in, so 2020 is when we hit our first million. And then 2021, we were at like 1.2. And then 2022 is actually when the supply chain from COVID really caught up to us. So imagine we're this, you know, bootstrap brand where we're five campaigns deep. These customers are waiting for products, and the products are not coming. And we have barely any inventory because we've been just relying on pre-orders. So we're trying to keep the lights on. At that time too, we were, you know, being interviewed and on this for this big show here in the US, Shark Tank, which I think is it
Dragon's Den in the UK.
Dragon's Den, not Lion's Den. Yeah, Dragon's Den. But yes, Shark Tank here. And we were also being followed by this camera crew from this documentary we were in called Show Her the Money, which is about the lack of funding for female founders and how there needs to be more female investors. But it was all during this very vulnerable time in our life where we were selling our home, you know, to keep the business afloat. So yeah, just to keep the lights on, you know, because we knew, you know, we couldn't do it. And I will say, you know, one of the biggest, if anyone's going through some hard times right now, one of the biggest exercises that we did, that was the game changer, that was like, okay, we just have to do this and sell our home, which is crazy. We did a team little goal setting, right? Which no, most companies do. You know, where are we going to be in 1 month, 3 months, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years? You know, we're dreaming big. We're that next Levi's Evolved Gender Fashion. But the gut punch question was, where would the world be without Dapper Boy in 10 years? And that's where we were like, we have to keep going. This is not about me. I have to get out of my own way here. We're remembering those customers that are like, you're changing my life. I had that confidence now to get the job I never thought I could get. Or the parent that reached out that's like, thank you for existing. My 14-year-old suicidal child started smiling because she saw one of your video ads and feels like she belongs on this earth. Like, these are the stories. It's not about me. And so, yeah. So it's been a journey, I'll tell you what. But after that, you know, in that mindset shift, everything changed for us. You know, we got the lead investor, you know, we just kept going and we continue to. We're still on that fundraising journey. But what we've learned along the way here is the risks don't scare us as much. You know, I'm not crying under my desk anymore. Even when the hard times come, you know, it's just moving past that. Like, what am I grateful for today? There's so much to be grateful for. And there's so many things we've learned. And it's just such an exciting journey.
Oh, what to ask you about after that? That's brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing it. Because I think there's definitely a point in an entrepreneurial life where you realize that, yeah, it's going to be tough, but I know I'll find a way through, which is clearly, you know, you've been through. And then the other thing I find quite fascinating is you've kind of, the way you've evolved how the business is funded, like you did the Kickstarter and then you took the best bits from Kickstarter world, but did it via your own website with the pre-order model. So we get the cash up front, but they're signing up to us. They're not signing up to Kickstarter. We're not paying Kickstarter money and we're in control. So we can just roll and roll and roll and roll all those campaigns. But then when all that supply chain nightmare happened in 2022, it didn't cause you to kind of like implode. It led to this realization that actually we're a grown-up business now. We need to find another way to do this because our mission is more than selling great clothes on pre-order. We're more than that. So are you still doing a lot of pre-order launches, or are you now more like a permanent in-stock scenario?
You know, I would say because we're on that fundraising journey still, we'll once in a while do a pre-order, you know, when we need to, because we're, you know, could be missing out on a whole season of products if we don't, you know. And so it's been interesting, but we have been able to, with, you know, capital, get ahead of productions. I mean, the good side is we do have 10 years worth of data. We know what products work and what products sell fast. You know, like I will say, a good example of this was in 2024, you know, September was our best month of sales. We did $270,000 in 1 month. And that was with two simple product launches, a button up and a new style of jeans. Like, so we know what works and what we did though. So now the hybrid of that, of all those lessons learned again, is when we have a production here, we'll still do intro pricing, but it's not for as long as 3 weeks. Like that's a long time. And that again can hurt margins if we just sell all products at that level. So now we do, it's about 20% off, you know, retail price of the product is our intro pricing. And then that goes for 1 week only. And we'll typically drop to our VIP customers, you know, 1 day before. And that typically is actually the best day. We have a 51% repeat customer rate in a world where, you know, fashion e-com strives for 28. And so these people, especially our VIP customers, they're coming back over and over and over again. So what we've learned even in the last few months here is, you know, because we were testing the market with paid ad spend, and because we're really trying to go above and beyond the LGBTQ community. We're a mainstream brand because we're solving a problem for so many different people. And so, you know, with that, we were testing different markets. We're testing, you know, plus size men or athletic men. We're testing same on the women's side, plus size, also athletic bodies, as well as the LGBTQ community. So there's a lot of cost involved with that as we're testing these things, but we've learned so much with that. I digress. I think I went away from your original question here. I got off my own tangent, but I did have a point to what I was just saying.
No, it was really fascinating. My point was around like moving away from the pre-orders. I loved what you were saying about how the pre-orders enabled you to learn so much about the audience, because you're so focused. You're not focused on the whole range, you're focused on one thing. So you see, you really get to grips with what is and isn't working as you're running through that, and how you've pulled that into the wider business. You mentioned your VIP customers there. And I think everybody gets the concept of VIP, but lots of companies manage it in different ways. So is yours a subscription, they pay an amount per year to become a VIP? Is it people who you've tracked the lifetime value of and then you just bump them up to VIP and then they're an email list? Is it a loyalty program? What's your kind of the nuts and bolts of your VIP scheme?
Yeah, sure. We wanted to make it attainable. You know, I think I was thinking about in particular the Sephora kind of model, you know, and I love going up there and getting my little birthday gift or, you know, whatever it is, but it's attainable to get VIP levels. And so we wanted that. So right now we use a program, Loyalty Lion, which I think is actually a UK company.
Yep.
And we just your, you know, earning points, you know, with purchases. And we have it, I think our threshold is like so we have the squad, ballers, and shot callers as the top tier. And for ballers, it's only $300 a year, you know, spend to get into the ballers club. And we'll even ship out a hat to you, you know, once you hit baller status. And then shot callers, I think it's $1,200 or more a year. And so again, like these people, the perks that you get is like, you know, you get that intro drop, you know, before other people, because we are known to sell out. And that's a good thing. You know, it's not a great thing when you don't have inventory and people are coming to your site and looking, you know, where you're at. But it is great for these launches because it really creates that urgency to buy. And then we know we'll sell out quickly. We're not looking to stock our shelves and sit on inventory forever.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. Vicky, are you ready for the top tips?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
10X is Easier Than 2X by Dan Sullivan. Yep, our friends went and we actually did a retreat just to read this book. And it's incredible because it's just, again, that mindset. Like you can put in all a 2X effort and only get 2X results. But if you can, you know, just put in a little bit more, you can actually, you know, with the 10X results you can receive, it just completely changed our mindset. Like we need to hire, you know, even without capital right now, I'm going to hire this assistant because we need to scale the brand. We need to hire people that are smarter, even if it costs a little bit more, because the results from that are going to be immense for us.
And you said you went on a retreat to read the book. Literally, you just booked somewhere to give yourself the time to read it yourselves?
Yes, yes. It was my wife and I and two friends that are also entrepreneurs. And we booked 2 days away. And that's what we did. And we talked about the book. And it just, like, walking away from that, you feel so empowered and just ready to go. And sometimes you just need that mental break to just get away. You know, it was all about growth, not about what we were, you know, going through at the moment.
I love that approach. Very cool. Traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Yeah, I think right now, and this is a huge lesson learned for us, is we can dial back on paid ad spend with influencer marketing. I know a lot of people are using this now. We use a program called Lionize. And we have a VA that literally contacts, creates campaigns and puts it out there to micro influencers, you know, because people are really, you know, listening and, you know, on social media, especially right now, all of the time. And so when you're talking about a brand, especially a mission based one, we're able to just ship product. We're not paying massive influencer prices. You know, these people are just down for the mission and their content is real. And then we can use that even for paid ads, you know, so that has been huge for us.
Very cool. And the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I am absolutely obsessed with ClickUp. I feel like I should work for them because I'm always talking about them. And now it's crazy because they have this AI, you know, like autopilot mode where I'm literally just speaking my tasks into my app in my phone. And it's completely taking those and like, can organize my whole day for me, which is like massive when I have just back-to-back meetings and just trying to get ahead, but it keeps us completely organized. I even add my manufacturers. They're a part of ClickUp. So they know, you know, we know what's going on with that project or whatever product we have going on, and the whole team is aware. And you could even use it, you know, instead of Slack. We're kind of going away from Slack because now they have that in there too. So this is a really like all-in-one platform that I'm absolutely obsessed with.
Oh, nice. I'm going to have to go and have another look at ClickUp. Clearly, it's evolved since the last time I did. So loving that one. The carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Yeah, it's the carbon neutral shipping that we currently offer, you know, on all orders. And it's just something so like the customers, it's built in and they don't have to think about, but it's something they offer and they just know that their order is offset.
So you do that for all orders, or is it like an upgrade? They can tick a box to go carbon neutral?
It is for all orders, you know, and I think for us too, it's really important because we're not like a fast fashion brand. So like on the other side of it too, just our products, you know, they're long lasting, they're durable products. It's, you know, I tend to find even like women's clothing in particular, the quality between women's and men's, just like fabrics that are used, ours are durable, they're long lasting and they're timeless pieces. We're not a trendy clothing brand by any means. So that's something we're proud of. And we're always looking at different ways. And I know I'm excited, you know, when we go to the UK in particular, I know sustainability is massive and huge there and is of utmost importance. And it is to me too. I'm a vegan, you know, that's a personal story here too. So I'm really excited to look into what kind of options I've seen, you know, shirts made of fruit, you know, like it's just, it's so cool. And I'm looking forward to learning so much more and just adding more and more to our line. I know we're even right now, you know, just changing from a poly bag to, you know, recycled material. So we're looking into all those avenues right now.
I love it. And you're so right that the product part is so huge, you know, when you're not trying to have loads and loads of stock on the shelves all the time. So you're not running out and so you're not ending up with waste and you're, you know, creating products that last through the seasons is year after year as well is always so important. So love that you brought that up there, Vicky. Now, before we say goodbye, would you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Sure. So on Instagram, we're Dapper Boy, and that's with the I at the end, not a Y, Dapper Boy. And then if you'd like to follow our personal journey, my wife and I have an Instagram called Meet the Pashas, P-A-S-C-H-E. And you can see a lot of like behind the scenes of us building this brand, you know, and there's some family shots in there too with our twin 7-year-olds, and especially as we're venturing out to Spain, which is wild. But then also our website, www.dapperboy.com. TikTok is Dapperboy Squad.
Brilliant. Love that. And Vicky, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much with us. We really appreciate it. And I wish you all the best for the move. And do let me know when you're in the UK. We'll have to catch up.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
What a treat to get to hear the story behind Dapper Boy and how Vicky and her team have been growing and changing the business. I love that evolution of... We described it in the interview as how they're funding the business. It's kind of like the fundamental business model. You know, they went from Kickstarter to pre-order releases for many years, and then were kind of like juddered into shifting that by all those supply chain nightmares we had in 2022 into seeking out that funding in order to buy the stock in advance to then run the business more, in inverted commas, normally, but still with pre-orders because they've learned how they drive certain things. The knowledge Vicky has of her customers and her products is, it's clear they're going to be doing some great things. And I wish them all the success for that, for the, both the move to Europe and the expansion over here too. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and the links to what we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the correct episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business, like our e-commerce explored webinar series. If you liked this episode, then make sure you check out episode 265, where I'm chatting with Bree Reed about how she grew Snag tights to 2 million in sales a month. Snag is an inclusive tights brand, so very similar elements of mission to what Vicky was talking to us about. So it really does build on this episode. And you can find all our fashion episodes at ecmp.info/fashion. Thank you for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. We bring you a new interview every week to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a brilliant week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.